Teasing myself out of thought. A talk given at the Blue River Gathering in Oregon, 2008, revised 2014. Our host gave me some ideas for topics to start off our discussion. Where is a writer to find strength and hope in this world? What is a writer's calling in this time and place? What work will make a difference? And how might we create a community of purpose? I'm embarrassed because I come out with the same response to each question. Where am I to find strength and hope in this world? In my work, in trying to write well? What's a writer's calling, now or at any time? To write, to try to write well. What work will make a difference? Well-made work, honest work, writing well-written. And how might we create a community of purpose? I can't say. If our community of purpose as writers doesn't lie in our shared interest in and commitment to writing as well as we can, then it must lie in something outside our work. A goal or end. A message and effect, which may be most desirable, but which makes the writing merely a means to an end that lies outside the work, the vehicle of a message. And this is not what writing is to me. It is not what makes me a writer. Kids are taught writing in school as a means to an end. Most writing is indeed a means to an end. Love letters, information of all kinds, business communications, instructions, tweets. Much writing embodies, is, a message. So the kids ask me, when you write a story, do you decide on the message first, or do you begin with the story and put the message in it? No, I say, I don't. I don't do messages. I write stories and poems, that's all. What the story or the poem means to you, its message to you, may be entirely different from what it means to me. The kids are often disappointed, even shocked. I think they see me as irresponsible. I know their teachers do. They may be right. Maybe all writing, even literature, is not an end in itself, but a means to an end other than itself. But I couldn't write stories or poetry if I thought the true and central value of my work was in a message it carried, or in providing information or reassurance, offering wisdom, giving hope. Vast and noble as these goals are, they would decisively limit the scope of the work. They would interfere with its natural growth and cut it off from the mystery which is the deepest source of the vitality of art. A poem or story consciously written to address a problem or bring about a specific result, no matter how powerful or beneficent, has abdicated its first duty and privilege, its responsibility to itself. Its primary job is simply to find the words that give it its right, true shape. That shape is its beauty and its truth. A well-made clay pot, whether it's a terracotta throwaway or a Grecian urn, is nothing more and nothing less than a clay pot. In the same way, to my mind, a well-made piece of writing is simply what it is, lines of words. As I write my lines of words, I may try to express things I think are true and important. That's what I'm doing right now in writing this essay. But expression is not revelation, and this essay, though there's art in the writing of it, is less a work of art than a message. Art reveals something beyond the message. A story or poem may reveal truths to me as I write it. I don't put them there. I find them in the story as I work. And other readers may find other truths in it, different ones. They are free to use the work in ways the author never intended. Think of how we read Sophocles or Euripides. For 3,000 years, we've been reading the Greek tragedies, putting our souls into them and discovering in them lessons in human passion, pleas for justice, inexhaustible meanings, far beyond what the author's conscious intention of religious or moral teaching, of warning or solace or community celebration, could ever provide. Those works were written out of that mystery, the deep waters, the wellspring of art. Keats is on my side in this, if I understand his principle of negative capability, and so is Lao Tzu, who observed that the use of the pot is where the pot is not. A poem of the right shape will hold 1,000 truths, but it doesn't say any of them. I am not talking art for art's sake, because that unfortunate slogan implies that art is solipsistic, its effect on its audience of no account. That's a mistake. Art does change people's minds and hearts. And an artist is a member of a community, the people who may see, hear, read her work. My first responsibility is to my craft, but if what I write may affect other people, obviously I have a responsibility to them too. Even if I don't have a clear idea of what the meaning of my story is and only begin to glimpse it as I write, still, I can't pretend it isn't there. So, as the bright-eyed and accusatory children ask me, if you know something, shouldn't you just say it? Can truth only be implicit? Why does the pot you make have to be empty? Why can't you fill it with goodies for us? Well, first, for a totally practical reason, because telling it slant works much better than overt moralizing does. It is more effective. But there's a moral reason, too. What my reader gets out of my pot is what she needs, and she knows her needs better than I do. My only wisdom is knowing how to make pots. Who am I to preach? No matter how humble the spirit it's offered in, a sermon is an act of aggression. The great way is very simple. Merely forego opinion, says the Taoist, and I know it's true. But there's a preacher in me who just longs to cram my lovely pot with my opinions, my beliefs, with truths. And if my subject's a morally loaded one, such as man's relationship to nature, well, that inner preacher's just itching to set people straight and tell them how to think and what to do. Yes, Lord, amen. I have more trust in my inner teacher. She is subtle and humble because she hopes to be understood. She contains contradictory opinions without getting indigestion. She can mediate between the arrogant artist self who mutters, "I don't give a damn if you don't understand me," and the preacher self who shouts, "Now hear this." She doesn't declare truth, but offers it. She takes a Grecian urn and says, "Look closely at this. Study it, for study will reward you. And I can tell you some of the things that other people have found in this pot, some of the goodies you, too, may find in it." Since, like most artists, I long to share with others what my art has taught me, I need my inner teacher. But I can never fully trust her either. After all, she's the one who taught the kids to expect a message. Her instinct is to be clear, be explicit. Mine is to try to go past explication into a larger clarity. My job is to keep the meaning completely embodied in the work itself, and therefore alive and capable of change. I think that's how an artist can best speak as a member of a moral community. Clearly, yet leaving around her words that area of silence, that empty space in which other and further truths and perceptions can form in other minds. That space is where such words as these are spoken. Thou still unravished bride of quietness, thou foster child of silence and slow time, thou silent form dost tease us out of thought as doth eternity.